Let me just ask you a question that I need an answer to by the end of this session. And this relates to the content. What we're looking at here is a mixture of how the seminaries teach this theology of word material, what are different delivery kind of mechanisms, and both within the curriculum and outside the curriculum, and what would a curriculum look like anyway? And I prepared a paper to start with, which was really some homework that I did in my last study leave, mainly looking at a whole variety of different seminaries in the States, in Britain, already having done some work in Australia, and New Zealand in particular. So this is a Western-shaped kind of response, which will... So I want to introduce that. This was written as homework for my own training institution, which is in New Zealand, Laid Law College in New Zealand. So it was really helping us reflect on kind of where have we got to and where do we go from here. But this paper was written to what can we learn from other people about where they've got to. And so I'll start with that. Then Paul Stephen's going to talk particularly about Regent College and the Backey program from his observations through involvement there, and then Al Erisman will be finishing by reflecting on the Seattle Pacific experience, but also Gordon Connell and what he knows through involvement there, of their approaches to these things. And so there's quite a lot of input into this session, but that's because the next hour after the tea break will be all devoted to discussion on these issues here. And my question is this, if you could think about this, because we'll decide at the end, is do you want to continue this discussion just in the groups as you are at the tables, or do you feel like this is a discussion that you'd like to pursue, those of you who are involved with Alpha, looking at what this means for you specifically in your organisation, other people involved in seminary leadership there or other organisations. If you have an opinion about that, then you can voice it at the end, because we'll decide then what the best discussion groups will be for what follows. So we haven't pre-decided that. So we're looking for some feedback about that. But first of all, the input. What I was particularly interested in looking at for my reasons was what are the different models that seminaries have adopted to include marketplace theology or theology of work in their curriculum? Secondly, to try and identify what are the essential core elements that a core curriculum might look like. Thirdly, how are these elements already delivered at Laidlaw College, which is the place that I was involved in, and also some key questions that we're still wrestling with in the light of this. And I'm not going to go through all the detailed things here, just through the main headings for you. But models that we can learn from, and you're welcome to in the discussion. I don't pretend to be absolutely inclusive of everything here, or and there are probably nuances to these approaches that you can think of. But this is what I've come up with thus far. Firstly, there's the inclusion of one or two marketplace courses in undergraduate degree programs. Now, these are undergraduate theology degree programs. In New Zealand, a large number of students do theology as an undergraduate degree, and I know that that's unusual in the American situation. We don't have anything like the American liberal arts kind of approach, general liberal arts approach to degrees. So we have people who specialise in theology as a first degree, and a large number of our students in that category. And so places like Laidlaw College, like Carey College, a number of American Christian colleges and other places elsewhere may go there, may include some elements in their liberal arts degrees. But so there are some institutions that include marketplace courses or theology of work courses as part of undergraduate degrees. Secondly, there's the inclusion of marketplace courses as part of a specialist postgrad, master's and dean seminary programs. Theology is usually done, of course, in a postgrad master's course and not a primary degree in the United States. So here are the examples of Regent College, Gordon Conwell, Becky Graduate University, Concordia College. There's a whole variety of different examples of that, of the inclusion of marketplace courses as part of specialist postgrad masters and DMIN seminary programs. I've got elaborate descriptions of all of these in another fuller 33-page version of this, but I didn't throw it out to you. But if anybody's looking for more information about any of these, I have got the full version. Thirdly, there's the inclusion of a compulsory marketplace module as part of seminary training. Now, there are a number of seminaries training people for ministry who still try and include some module on the theology of work or marketplace theology for people who are training for pastoral leadership and so on. And some do it for credits and some don't. Some require it as a compulsory element but without credits. So, for instance, there are intensive models at the Presbyterian School of Ministry in Dunedin. I happen to know that one because I teach that particular course. Also at Ridley College in Cambridge with Richard Higginson. Doesn't include assignments in the Ridley College one, does for the Dunedin one. Luther Seminary in Minneapolis, we're examining calling as a compulsory component of their training, funded by the Lilly Foundation, and there are a whole series of American schools that have been part of the Lilly Foundation calling initiative, who have also included those things. And just lately, and I think that Al's going to say something more about this, the Kern Family Foundation has also been encouraging the development of something similar for a number of American theology seminaries. And so Bethel Seminary, Azusa Pacific, and so on. So that's another way. Fourthly, there's the inclusion of Christian ethics courses in business school and MBA programs at Christian colleges. Some have already talked about that in relationship to some Asian seminaries and business schools here. So the business schools at Seattle Pacific University and Crowell School of Business at Biola University and so on, they and a number of other Christian colleges include theology of work components as part of their, or include Christian ethics courses at least as part of their business school and MBA programs. Fifthly, colleges offering seminars and resourcing to graduates and marketplace people beyond their normal courses and clientele. A number of colleges have developed marketplace resourcing units, or named a number of different things, the Marketplace Institute at Regent College, the Centre for Integrity and Business at Seattle Pacific University, and the Fuller Seminary's Max Dupree Centre, Ridley College, Cambridge. A lot of the material that comes out in these faith and business journals comes out of the seminars that Richard Higginson arranges there, and the input from those is written up in these magazines. That's why each of the magazines is built around a particular theme. And Richard's books have been written through a lot of the input that's come from that too. And and so there's a lot of it's delivered by seminaries then, people who are involved in teaching in seminaries, but outside of the regular program and through their marketplace institutes, which have been developed in a variety of different ways. So that's another step. Another one is faculty members teaching ethics courses for particular professions as part of ongoing professional development that's required in those professions. In a lot of cases, certain professions require that people do a certain number of courses to maintain their professional registration and so on, and people can be involved in teaching ethics programs or other programs in relation to that. And a number of seminaries where they've got staff specialised in business ethics and so on, you can use staff in that kind of way. And I've listed quite a number of people there who, there are quite a lot of quite impressive evangelical ethicists, actually, when it comes to business ethics and so on. And you can see a number of them there related to Seattle Pacific, where Al comes from. Anyway, I'll leave it for him to say more in that regard if he wants to. Number eight, training aimed to see pastors and churches better equipped to resource their people. This is evident in some measure at Laidlaw College, where I am, at Carey College, which is the Baptist college in New Zealand. The Lillian Kern Foundation initiatives mentioned in three above. And so quite a number of colleges have really sought to provide some more significant input for people who are going into pastoral leadership. And but this can be delivered in a variety of different ways. So this is beyond the compulsory element. So one of the comments that was made to me by Will Messenger, who had been heading up the Mokma Centre at Gordon Cromwell, was that of the extracurricular workplace courses which were offered, probably about 25% of the pastoral leadership students would attend those courses. So in this case, they're not compulsory, they kind of are voluntary electives that are outside of the formal curriculum. So number nine, colleges working in partnership with student ministries, graduate ministries and other marketplace ministry groups. And so Seattle Pacific University have a special relationship with InterVarsity in the USA, particularly using John Terrell on their staff to kind of follow those things through, but also Al and others are involved in things like Urbana and so on that are run by InterVarsity USA. Kerry College in New Zealand have been working with the New Zealand equivalent, which is called TSCF. And also, I used to be a staff worker for that movement myself, so we have close relationships with that student movement as well, and a number of other student movements of different sorts. So here are a whole variety of different ways that seminaries are seeking to teach this stuff and deliver it partly within the curriculum, partly beyond the curriculum. My conclusions about this is this. In most cases, seminaries with existing marketplace ministry centres have private funding to support them. Most people don't pursue this unless the funding is coming from somewhere outside of the regular program to support, I think. Many seminaries are currently expressing anxiety. I agree with Paul here. I agree with him, I see. Expressing anxiety about declining student numbers overall, it seems to me marketplace theology courses struggle to be integrated within mainstream theological programs. The real danger is here is that everything gets paired off. It's actually not tied to the core of the offering. And so most people, I think, who are heading up such centres find themselves struggling to dedicate themselves to a marketplace focus because of other institutional requirements and pressures. One of the things I noticed, I always used to think very enviously about people like Paul and Richard Higginson and Will Messenger. I used to think these people, they dedicated all of their time just to doing the marketplace stuff. And I thought, if only I could do that, because I was juggling a role as a pastor and also doing some teaching and so on. But actually, when I went to visit them, I found it wasn't like that at all. That actually, a lot of them were burdened by a lot of other institutional pressures. They found it really hard. So that they actually didn't have more students in their classes than what I was dealing with myself, even though I was only working in a part-time evening capacity where I was. And I found that in most cases there's a huge gap between the dream that's promoted and the reality that I observe in many of these places. So when you look at things from a distance, you can kind of get a rather rosier view of things than they look. And there seems to be a significant gap between the academic world and the grassroots resourcing of marketplace Christians. Most marketplace people are never going to go to a seminary to do a course, I don't think. And a few seminaries offer popularly constructed courses beyond their standard offerings, which are delivered to people where they are, either in their churches or in their workplaces or elsewhere. Only a few seminaries, I think, have caught the vision of equipping pastors and those who support and resource marketplace Christians really find it hard to put serious resources into doing the job well. The combination of effective leadership piloting a centre with both good marketplace and church connections as well as academic credibility, plus effective practical and financial support teams, in my experience, is actually a very rare thing. Now, a second part of my original paper includes a significant reflections about the journey of my own college here. What I want to throw in, and I'm just going to quickly skim through this, is what are the core components that I think a marketplace theology should include, and then how are these delivered within my particular institution? How are we working through this? And this is, I'm only doing this not to offer you what we're doing as a model, but actually just to help you think about what are you seeing as being the core components that you need to include within your curriculum and how will they be offered? So these are the ones that I've picked. One, God's work and our work, there needs to be an introduction to a theology of work. Two, an introduction to a theology of mission and of ministry as this relates to the whole people of God and their involvement in the world of work. Most people haven't caught a glimpse of God's big story that our stories are kind of also involved in. And the words mission and ministry are very loaded with meanings that don't attach to the everyday life of Christians in the workplace mostly. Thirdly, a theology of calling and vocation that is related to the work of all God's people, including work both inside and outside the church. Fourthly, practical exploration. It's one thing to understand that in theory, but you're going to help people through to a practical exploration of what calling and vocation specifically means for individuals, including practical processes for clarifying gifts and values and for discerning the guidance of God. I really what Timothy talked about earlier in terms of, was it the crossroads? Crossings program, yeah, that was great. Exploring five understandings and practices for developing a spirituality for everyday life. Six, resourcing the people of God for evangelism in the workplace. Seven, churches supporting Christians at work. A theology of church and models of equipping churches and empowering leaders in theory and practice. Ethics for the marketplace, number eight, both theory and case studies there. Nine, the purpose of business and models of Christian business and entrepreneurship. 10, business as mission and models for marketplace ministry, a marketplace mission. 11, a theology for and from the marketplace. This whole discussion of kind of doing theology contextually, which is not only done by academics in remote places, but actually what is a theology that comes from those engaged on the ground look like? The theology from below and not just from above. The church and the arts, number 12. Cultural transformation, about which people from different traditions have different perspectives. So how should we set about trying to change the world or not? Number 14, Christian leadership for the marketplace and the world. And number 15, balancing competing time demands, learning to juggle work at home, work on the job, church work, community work, and leisure. Now, I don't want to go into the details of what follows, except that I think that I think our institution is attempting in some way to take all of these things seriously, but we do it in quite different ways. And only some of that's part of our regular curriculum. Quite a lot of that is offered outside our curriculum. So what you'll see that I've tagged there under each of these headings is I've noted how each of these ones is dealt with within courses that we offer. And you'll see that I've got three different categories. One is, this is a compulsory core curriculum course that every student has to do in our institution. Secondly, there are elective courses which people choose to do as specialised courses looking at theology of work stuff. And thirdly, there is the stuff that's not offered in the courses but through outside seminars. I think that one of the things that I've been working on particularly, and this is a real challenge, and I haven't seen too many examples of this working successfully. But one of the things that bothered me is I worked to develop over a period of about 10 years a whole series of kind of elective courses which were run in the evening so that people involved in the marketplace could easily access these courses as well as our regular students. What I discovered was that quite a few people from the marketplace did them, but few of our regular students did them because they didn't want to come out again in the evening to do courses when they could pick other courses during the day to do that. So I came to the conclusion that the only way that most of our students would ever get to address these courses were if we could put, we do have a core of courses that every student has to do. The New Testament, Old Testament introduction, a formation course, a course on worldviews. These are all compulsory courses plus an introduction to mission and ministry. So what I thought I would do is try and work hard, this was 8 years ago now that we started this, to see how many of the components that I thought were really essential in terms of the courses I had been teaching could actually be integrated within existing core courses so that every student going through our institution had to do them. It helped that they decided at that point in time to make me the coordinator for the formation course and for the introduction to mission and ministry courses. But I also worked with the people doing the Old Testament and New Testament introduction courses to have modules there on calling and what it means for the life of the whole people of God. So one of the things that you'll see down here, and I think this is a little bit different, I think, than what there are two particular challenges I think we haven't kind of bitten off yet. And one of them is most seminaries have left up to one inspired individual who loves this area of teaching to do the teaching, but they haven't integrated within the other core courses this material. I think we've tried harder than most institutions to start doing that, but it's actually required my pushing and my good relationship with other people and my coaching to enable that to happen. And so you'll see that. So that's one of the things that I think is a real challenge that we're starting to pull off, and it means that all of our students are getting some of this stuff anyway. That's been very important, I think, because it does seem to me that we've just been through a recent restructuring of our courses again to pull out some of the elective courses and reduce the number of courses. Fortunately, I'd already been involved in anticipating this, and it means that we've preserved most of the material I wanted. But we actually only have one specialist course called Vocation, Work and Ministry now amongst all of our marketplace courses. All the rest of the content is either included within those core courses or we try and offer it in other ways to students. I think the other thing that we haven't done as much about, and I don't pretend to have sussed this completely, but I think is a huge challenge, is how do we really work to resource well the people who are teaching in other subject areas so that they include this material? What does it mean in church history, for instance, for this whole area to be included? Where are the model of kind of resourcing marketplace Christians from church history? I've been trying to gather the examples of that. Someone who currently has been really helpful in this regard is that the guy who's heading up the Kern Foundation's initiative at Bethel Seminary, Chris Armstrong, is a church historian, and in the church history journal that's put out by Christianity Today, he's starting to write more and more articles picking up these kind of models from history. But I've been trying to drop the Quaker stories of wonderful business enterprises that into church history to make more of the Reformation period and help out the person teaching Reformation church history to really pick up on this as a major thing, the whole question of kind of vocation and the calling of the whole people of God, the Lutheran and Calvin, and then the Puritan emphases, because I think that's such a formative kind of period. The same in the biblical areas. I think this is why I've been involved in the Theology of Work project. At last, I didn't have any resources to throw the people teaching particular biblical books before, but now I've got some resources we can toss to them and say, listen, here's one credible theologian's take on the faith and work thing. Have a look at this and see if it adds anything to the way that you approach the biblical topics. And in every subject area, I think we have to kind of start to explore how do these things come home to impact? Because I agree very much with what was said yesterday about teaching Romans, that at the end of the day, if this is not integrated within our regular teaching, it will never become part of our regular Christian lives. Because otherwise, we just say, this is something that a few people who have a special interest in this area take seriously, and they will elect to do this course. But unfortunately, it will just pass everybody else by. And And it's not until it becomes part of our routine preaching and teaching in the life of congregations that it becomes part of our core curriculum in the life of seminaries that I think that we can say we're really making progress in this regard. And at the moment, I think that we're only just starting still to make progress in this regard. I think that my conclusions then are this. That, and I've said there are a number of issues there that we're still working through, but let me just, wrong page. Training other people to teach the superior is a challenge, getting faculty in other areas to move it. Developing more integrated courses in general is a challenge, and so is working interculturally in New Zealand. The approaches to these issues of Maori and Pacifica people in New Zealand particularly, but also Asian immigrants in New Zealand, is quite different than what we've developed so far mostly. And we need to think more about developing the most effective strategies for kind of taking this on the next step. But Paul, over to you to talk about more specific places and then out.
Well, thank you for a stunning piece of research. I think that was pretty amazing, actually. I'm going to talk for about 15 minutes on Regent College in Vancouver and Bakke Graduate University. And then I believe Al Arispit's going to follow up. We'll have our tea break, and this is a half-hour tea break, so you can even have a sleep, to be followed by a pure discussion. And I would hope at the end, Al, that you might ask the question whether people want to meet in regional groups, perhaps, or in their organizational groups for discussion. I've been working at Regent College part-time since 1972, which is a long time ago. But that's when the school actually was born. It started in 71 as a summer school. And they brought in people for 1 and 2 week courses for the summer. And then the following year, they decided to offer a diploma in Christian studies. And we had 7 students. We actually had 9, but 2 were killed just before the school started in a tragic motor accident. But it was followed by gathering a small faculty. Some names that you might even recognize. James Houston was our first principal, and Ward Gask, and Carl Armading, and Dr. Martin, and so on. And they moved from 7 to 50 and developed a 2-year degree as well as the diploma that would be a Master of Christian Studies. That term, by the way, existed before any other school had used it, and now Regent switched to an MA at the very time when a number of schools have adopted the MCS. But the idea behind Regent was that somebody would quit their job in Toronto and come to Vancouver for 8 months of integration. These are marketplace people by and large, and then return to Toronto and get another job. Now in the 70s, you could do that. You can't do that. In 2013. The world has changed. Nobody quits their job in Canada today unless they're leaving it for good. And that's incidentally behind a phenomenon which I found as a part-time and eventually full-time professor at Regent, which is most Regent students didn't have the slightest idea of what they were going to do when they finished their program. Now, in most seminaries, everybody knows what they're going to do. They're going to be a pastor or a missionary. But most of our students at Regent were completely confused. So I went to the dean as a local pastor, and I said, I am sick and tired of counseling Regent students who don't know what to do when they graduate. I said, you do something about it. And he turned to me and he said, you do something about it. So I got hold of a PhD in vocational counseling at UBC, and I drafted a course that's been offered every year called Vocation, Work, and Ministry, which is a course to help people figure out what to do with their life. But in the genesis of Regent, that is actually a significant thing, because people are not just going to be pastors and missionaries. Though, to be completely honest, it's roughly 50-50. In our summer school courses, I think it is 75 marketplace, 75%, and 25% pastors, perhaps even more than 75. But during the year, it's mostly 50-50. They moved controversially to offer a Master of Divinity. And the purists in the organization figured this was the end of it. This was Babylon now, because now they were becoming a seminary. Because the school had started with the vision for providing graduate theological education for the whole people of God. The cornerstone of our little building at the edge of the UBC campus says Ephesians 4:11, 12. God gave pastor teachers to equip the saints, which is always a corporate term in Scripture, to equip the saints for the work of ministry or the works of service. Now, as they developed the MDiv, though, they wanted to develop an MDiv that would help people empower the whole people of God for their service. So this is where I got involved, both with the MDiv and MCS, and became a full-time professor eventually at Regent, and then shortly afterwards the dean. I became a dean in a very funny way, and perhaps you need a story by now because you've been listening to a lot of data. But they had an outside candidate who had a PhD and was absolutely a superb scholar, and then they came to me and they said, would you be the inside candidate? I said, look, I have a doctor of ministry, I don't have a PhD, all we want you to be the inside candidate. I said, well, I'll go to the interview. And the interview was, you can imagine the esteemed names of our faculty at that particular moment. And I said, I want every one of you to tell me what you look for in an academic dean. And they said something equivalent to this: I'm looking for someone who will critique my scholarly articles. So at the end of the interview, I told the president that they were looking for a senior scholar and I was not that person. So they went to the outside candidate. Unfortunately, that person had to declare that his marriage was breaking up because his wife would not move to Vancouver. So they came to me and said, would you be the academic dean for 1 year on an interim? I said, I'm not an interim person. I'm an entrepreneur. I'll design and rebuild this whole place. So I said, it's 4 years or nothing. Well, they went in committee again, came back and said, 2 years. Well, I said, look, I told you, 4 years or nothing. So they met again and came back and said, how about 3 years? So this is a bit like Abraham haggling with the Lord, isn't it? So I prayed, my wife prayed, we decided we'd do it for 3 years. So I went to my assistant after 3 years and said to Catherine, she was fantastic. I said, Catherine, I'm going back to faculty. And I taught full-time while I was dean as well as running the whole place. But I said, Catherine, I'm going back to faculty. She said, you can't. I said, why not? She said, I refuse to train another dean. So I did 3 more years. But as we developed the Master of Divinity, I developed a core course for that, which was equipping the saints. And so they got in that a theology of work and a theology of ministry. And most people took the vocation, work, and ministry course, so they got another dose of the theology of work as well as the theology of calling, as in addition, of course, a whole discernment process. They developed eventually a Christian life course, which was a core for everybody, which did include a component of the theology of work, and that has morphed more recently in the last 5 years into something that is even more academic and is, frankly, I don't think is as good, but it's called Christian Thought and Culture, that involves almost the whole faculty, and there is a component in that. But I think there's a drift, I'm being totally candid here, a kind of drift away. Okay, I'm concerned about that. Meanwhile, as dean, I started the Marketplace Institute, believing that we had to build a bridge between the theological school and people in professions, business, and trades. And so we did three things. We researched. Secondly, we developed an instrument, a journal called Vocatio, some of the articles, which you're welcome to download, I'll leave it here, are actually from that journal, including LT's paper, for example. But the main thing we did was we contracted with business and professional people to form cohorts to integrate their faith and work. And we did this on the basis of a one-year commitment meeting once every 2 months for a block of time that started Friday noon to Saturday at 3 o'clock. Almost everybody was free to take off a Friday afternoon and evening. We met early on Saturday and finished at 3, which gave them time with their families. Coming back to that, what is the best model? And we explored different models and came up with that. And the resourcing of it was a theological professor and a thoughtful practitioner. Never one without the other. And that was absolutely dynamic, because the professor really had to integrate, but also the thoughtful practitioner really brought another whole depth of theological reflection and integration and practical matters. So we developed the Marketplace Institute, and it's been taken over by my successor, Paul Williams, who is a senior economist in a large UK company. And I think in large measure, I think this is not unkind to say this, it's become much more of a think tank. A think tank with a practical application, I think. They have developed an amazing resource called Reframe. And Reframe is reframing the whole grand narrative, the whole story of the Bible, in such a way that people will actually hear the Word of God. And it involves the whole faculty. And they've raised $300,000 to have this professionally videotaped. It'll be like the Alpha DVDs, but it will be free on the internet, which means anybody can do it. And they're hoping to be finished by next December. So that's Regent. I think we're not there yet, okay? And your airplane analogy, Al, I've always felt that with regard to the application of the, you might say, theology of work and theology of the whole people of God, you know, I fly a lot, and sometimes I look out on those engines and I say, they've been working hard and they deserve a rest. But you know, that airplane can only be kept in the air by constantly working hard. And I think in any theological institution, the force of gravity will always go back to clericalism. And you have to work real hard continuously, even if you put it in your constitution. Bakke Graduate University bought a more or less defunct college in Washington State and reminted it as Bakke Graduate University. Bakke is a family name. Dennis was the president of AES, the largest energy company in the world. Ray Bakke is rather famous for Urban Mission, and Lowell Bakke, who is the genius behind it, because he holds those two brothers together as a Baptist pastor, and some other people joined together to form Bakke Graduate University, which started with an essentially urban mission focus. And so Ray Bakke was taking people into cities, and they would have 10 days of immersion and exegeting the city and all that stuff and so on, which was wonderful. And they had concentrated courses in various places of the world. But then they hit a financial wall. It was so hard, that wall, that they actually said, we're going to have to fold up. And the accrediting body says, you have to give a year's notice for that. So they announced their folding. And you wouldn't believe this, but it's a small college, a university. But we actually graduated that year, as many people as Regent College did, because we just got people through. But then at the last minute, they decided they're going to keep going. And so I call this a kind of death and partial resurrection. And I say partial because it's tough. Right now, the president and the dean have been working for 8 months without salary. So you've got an idea that it's not easy. And yet, I just got an email this morning from them and said they're just high on how things are going. They were offering two master's degrees, one in urban mission and the other in entrepreneurial activity, and then an MBA, and then a doctor of ministry, and then a beautiful degree called the Doctor of Transformational Leadership. Now, who would that appeal to? You got it. So Jeremy Yee, who now lives in Singapore, and he is the COO for HSBC, so you've got an idea of sort of where he is in the corporate ladder, is doing his Doctor of Transformational Leadership. And we've got people all over the world doing that. And it's an exciting degree to me, because people in the marketplace don't want a DMIN. They don't want a Doctor of Ministry. They want a doctorate degree that integrates their faith with business and leadership. And so in the partial resurrection, and here I appeal to you, when you have 8 minutes, Google EPIC 2020. It's on there. EPIC 2020. That's 2020. And it tells the story of online education. How from 2009, when the Khan Academy started offering online courses, and then eventually up to 2012, and professor at Stanford, who was teaching artificial intelligence, decided he would teach on campus and online at the same time. He had, I think it was 100 students on campus and 15,000 students online. And it was an incredible experience for him and opened up a door, so that even now the University of British Columbia is offering 2 courses free online. And students are beginning to say, we can get all the information free on the internet. What are we paying tuition for? You can do the theology of work now and go from Genesis to Revelation with the exception of Romans. And you can have that for nothing. Why would you pay money to go to a theological school when Al can help you get it for nothing? So there is a revolution in learning happening, folks. It is really happening. And they decided, having seen EPIC 2020, which is a bit forecasty and prophecy and so on after 2012, sort of saying what, where things are really going, but it's pretty reliable, I think. They decided they would have face-to-face courses as the core, a kind of overture in a city somewhere, but after that, everything would be online. So I've been designing and doing online courses with them. They use Moodle. They use a platform called Blackboard Conglomerate, which we meet once a week for an hour and a half, which allows us to see the thumbprints of every person's face in the group. It's a cohort-based thing. Everybody's face, and then I can upload a video or a YouTube thing or a PowerPoint, and of course they see my face too. And the students are literally all over the world. It is incredible. Guyana, Pakistan, Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, Tanzania, South, we have 52 countries. And one graduate in Kenya, his first idea was, he's a 5,000 member church pastor, okay? I'm going for 25,000. But then he took the course and he said, this is crazy, you know? I mean, so he started to teach the theology of work. And the South Sudan government, that new nation, invited him to teach all of their parliamentarians for one whole day on the theology of work. The second day, all the executive ministers of the government, and the third day, all the church leaders in the country. And at the end of those 3 days, they said, come back and give us 3 weeks, 1 week for each of those groups. The impact has been phenomenal. And I mentioned this morning how even in some countries in Asia that mosques and temples are inviting some of the adjunct faculty of BGU to actually teach the theology of work in their context. Some 52 countries for a small school, that's pretty amazing. Just quickly ending here, reinventing theological education. In the Bible, it was not school-based, but integrated with life. All learning was in the context of doing. Jesus didn't take people into a 3-year classroom. He said, come follow me. And he had all kinds of conflict situations and healings and everything else. And he said it was basically founded in community, that people grew to maturity. What was his whole training program was whole life discipleship with a view to people being mature people that are able to serve God and God's purposes in the world and in the context of the people of God. So, theological education, whether through house churches or Paul's traveling seminaries, in families, it was lifelong. It was not compressed into a three-year program. And it was for the whole people of God, not just future or present pastors. And my one-liner is, theological education is too good to be reserved for the clergy. I really believe that. Now, I've given you, at least if you want it, Reinventing Theological Education. I'm just picking it up here. Every theological school needs a core group of administrators, but small. Right now, Regent has 200% more than they need. Okay? Number two, we need a small core of salaried faculty. Small. This is in the context of saying we don't have a sustainable model right now, okay? And we've got to find one. And I think we can't afford to have a large faculty of salaried faculty. Most faculty, other than that small core, have to be self-supporting or partly supported, either because they are pastors in churches that are being released, seconded by that church to teach courses. Great advantage of that in terms of seminary education is that they are not telling old stories. And I tell every pastor who leaves pastor work to become a full-time professor in a seminary, you have a half-life of 5 years. After 5 years, you're telling old stories. And the same is true of marketplace. Why not have a whole core of people in every theological school, a doctor, teachers, people in business, investment, even tradespeople, and involve those people. Obviously, they're not going to be full-time, but they either can support themselves or will simply have a smaller salary and be remunerated as sessional professors. I'm a sessional professor right now. I'm self-employed. I earn, when I teach a course at Regent, one-fifth of what a salaried professor earns. So I have to teach 25 courses a year to live instead of five. Actually, I do only about 10. And so here's some options. I'm just going to finish up here early. The independently wealthy, if there's anybody here who's independently wealthy, just offer yourself. It's great. And then to move from residential education to community-based cohort education. And I would argue there's more community in a group of people to start and finish together and support each other through it than there is in the cafeteria. And the cafeteria is what we've got right now. I'm taking that course. Oh, well, I'm doing this elective, and so on. And then follow Jesus. Everybody needs a spiritual director or a friend, spiritual friend. Make every course both start and finish with praxis. So I teach using the case study method. I have hundreds of case studies in my computer here because that's how we do it. We do theology from bottom up as well as top down. Bottom up is what you have in Ecclesiastes and in Job. Top down is what you have in Romans, which is why it's not yet in the Theology of Word project. Stay out of debt. Spend what you have. Reduce facility costs. So BGU, for example, rents one floor of a church office building in Seattle. They don't own anything except a few computers and a few chairs. And then refocus theological education on the good news that Jesus preached. And what was that, folks? It was not the good news of soul salvation. I just had a bit of a vacation. I read Genesis to Revelation again. And the good news that Jesus preached over and over and over again is the good news of the kingdom of God. Oh, and if that doesn't include the theology of work, I don't know what does. Come on up now.
What we'll do, thanks to Paul the Apostle and Prophet, that's magnificent. And Al's going to speak for 15 minutes, then we'll take the half hour break at whatever time, it's half an hour from whatever time Al orders it, and then we'll come back to converse half an hour after the break. We'll name the time then.
Go for it. I'll try not to go 15 minutes. I wanted to give you two more models that are in practice, and I want to tell you a little bit about how they work, and it might be an inspiration to you. Let me mention, I had mentioned earlier when I talked about ethics that there was this car dealer that I had interviewed. Let me tell you one of the decisions he made. He decided, as a car dealer, that he ought to understand how much people were paying for a car. In the Western part of the world, when you buy a car, there's no fixed price. You negotiate for the price of the car, you negotiate for your trade-in, and all of this is a negotiated process. He found out that the people that paid the most for a car were the poorest people because they had the least education and the least negotiating skills. He went in and decided to fix price all of his cars, and to provide tools to allow people to figure out how much they get on the trade-in. Why did he do that? Well, he told me that the reason he did that is because he had a master's in Christian studies from Regent College and an MBA from University of Virginia, and he put the two together, and as a marketplace guy, he has transformed the way he does his marketplace work. It is a good investment. As to models of education, if any of you like to read, I'll give you another book. I didn't have this written down, but I can give you the precise reference in just a moment. It's a book entitled Abelard, A-B-E-L-A-R-D, to Apple by DeMillo. And it's a look at education and how it came to be the way it is today. There's a crisis not just in seminary education, but in education in general. The costs are too high, and people are perceiving a lower value, and the question is, how do you do it? And in this book, he takes apart what the components of education are all about and how technology is changing our world, and he asks the question, what does a new model for education look like? I'd encourage you to read it if you're leading a seminary and you want to say, it's not a Christian book at all, but if you want to get some insight as to how we got to this point where tenured faculty run an organization for their own benefit to teach their own courses, however lofty their goals may be, and students are kind of secondary. And it's a very thoughtful and thought-provoking book. Let me give you two examples of seminary education that I have been involved with. I'm going to talk very briefly about Seattle Pacific University and about Gordon Conwell. And these two classes, these two areas represent two models. And then I wanted to talk briefly about a force or an influence on seminaries in the United States that I think will have a reflection perhaps around the world. So Seattle Pacific. We actually started this theology stuff related to workplace and business in the business school rather than in the school of theology. And I've already told you, so I'm going to skip past some of these things about the institution of business and the observation and the book. But what this has led to is we're now teaching a lot of theology in the school of business, but it's just in the school of business. So how does this affect the seminary? We recently started a process with the school of theology, that's what SOT means, school of business and economics, school of theology. And we're now doing some joint courses between the school of theology and the school of business. We now have a joint master's degree on a master's in theology and business. And so the idea is to kind of bring these two together and take some joint courses. Then we've collected a group of resources. Pete Hammond, some of you may have known that name. He was with InterVarsity for many years. He had this huge collection of books, a couple thousand books that he had collected over the years in theology of work. When he decided to retire, he gave that to the library at Seattle Pacific University. We have a committee and we raise some funds. We add a lot of books every year to this collection. It's in its own private place. We can give you some resources on it. There's all sorts of books available there. So Seattle Pacific University, the model is a joint thing between the School of Business and the School of Theology. At Gordon-Conwell, there's something I think more interesting going on. I actually teach with both places, but this one I like a lot. There's what is called the Mockler Chair in the seminary. So a business person donated some money to fund a chair for a professor. The current Mockler Chair is Dr. David Gill. He's written a number of books. You may have read some of them, one on the Beatitudes and their application to organizational culture. It's called Becoming Good. There's one on the Ten Commandments, the application to leadership. It's called Doing Right. And David is the professor there. And he created this class, and he asked me to join him in teaching it. And it's being taught through the Doctor of Ministry program, but it's also being taught to people in a master's program, and next year it's going to be taught to people just looking for a certificate in workplace theology. And right now there are 10 Doctor of Ministry theses that we are overseeing, all related to the workplace, on some very interesting topics, including one on the importance and scriptural insight on debt, which is pretty interesting because, you know, a lot of Christians will say, well, we should have no debt. Well, what about debt? And many other topics. Let me tell you how this course is being offered, because it's the model that's interesting. Over a two-year period, we meet 6 weeks in residence. So we go to Gordon-Conwell the first week, and we had a week of theology of work. We gave people books to read, articles to read. We have discussions. And it's a very intense one-week session. The second week was on ethics, and we do the same thing. We bring in some resources, they read material, and we have this lively discussion about Christian ethics. The third week, we get into the details of work, and so we did finance and marketing. And we asked the question, what is a Christian view of finance and marketing? We decided that we needed to hold that in New York City because that's the center for finance and marketing. And so as a result, we brought in business people, some Christians, some non-Christians. We had them read books, Christian books, non-Christian books, read scripture, have discussions, debates, and the third week was finance and marketing. The fourth week was technology and entrepreneurship. We did that in Seattle. We had them exposed to all sorts of things around technology. We brought in entrepreneurs. We had books that they read and discussions about what is a biblical view of technology and entrepreneurship. The fifth week we wanted to do on globalization and development. So we went to Honduras and we looked at multinational companies like PepsiCo. We went and visited them. We went to a small toy company and we went to students to view 1,000 workers that are working in the garbage dump up on top of the hill, and spent time understanding how that workplace worked its way out and what relief organizations were doing about that. And then the sixth week, we went back to Gordon-Conwell to do a 1 week on leadership. So the idea is that over 2 years, we actually meet to get to know each other, to interact, to have intensive discussions. And as long as we're together, we say we might as well work. And so we work from 9 in the morning till 9 at night during that whole week. And then people go back and they read books, they write reviews. And we meet on Skype then once a month in between these sessions so we can have conversations, update people, motivate people, encourage people to get in their work. And so we've built a great relationship with people. I think what you can see is this is a hybrid between a residential thing and a online thing, and we're not sure if this is exactly the right balance, but it's the one that we're experiencing today. So I think this is a really fun model for seminary education, and I think it could be replicated almost anywhere. If anyone would like our syllabus, we'd be glad to send it to you, so you can let me know. Now I'd like to mention very briefly the Kern Foundation. Kern Family Foundation is a wealthy pot of money that they are giving away to seminaries in the United States. I don't think so, unfortunately. Unfortunately. But it's with a very specific target. It is, they have a concern. These are people that have been involved in the economy. They have a concern that what is taught from the church is that economics is bad stuff, and it's taught out of ignorance. And they said, we have to influence the seminaries to think about economics in a different way. And so as a result, what they have done is they look for innovative models of seminary education that can take place, and I'll give you two examples. I have left in here, in case you want a copy of this, how they, why they think that this is important, what they have done in terms of creating this foundation, what all the principles of economics are and why they're important in a biblical sense, and the net result. One of the grants came to the School of Theology at Seattle Pacific University, and the goal was, how do we develop some curriculum that would be taught in short courses, but that professors would attend so that that material could be infused in their classes. We did a one-week thing on a biblical view of economics. We did a discussion session on a Wesleyan perspective on work in economics. A lot of the material is reformed in the literature, and they wanted to see a Wesleyan view. So that is what was done, and the idea is to incorporate this then back into the School of Theology with professors. A second thing that's being done, and this is also done by David Gill at Gordon Conwell, is he got a grant to work with an inner city church. Most of the school theology of work material, as others have mentioned, is in the white collar area. And this was a predominantly black inner city church, and the idea of creating entrepreneurship. So what they did is that they identified 12 pastors who had to be the mentor of an aspiring entrepreneur. They would meet Saturday mornings for 10 weeks to go through the basics of entrepreneurship. And the net result at the end was they selected a couple of winners of the best entrepreneurship model, and they actually funded them with some investment money to start their business. And the whole goal is to think about entrepreneurship in inner city churches led by a seminary. So these are kind of different models, I think you would say, of seminary education. And you might actually ask this last one, what does that have to do with a seminary? And does this represent a drift from what a seminary is supposed to do? Paul mentioned earlier today, Luke chapter 4, verse 11, I think it's verse 11, where Jesus gave his mission statement, and he said, I've come to bring good news to the poor. How do you bring good news to the poor in an inner city church if it isn't through economic development? And if this is done in the name of Christ, it can transform that community. I think it's very exciting that these models are happening. I think overshadowing all of this is this technology factor and this new way of doing education. And I think some of this is starting to come together, but these are just some examples. So we're going to take a break. And I think what Alistair asked you to do is to make a decision. How would you like to have your discussion when we come back? Would you like it to be in the tables that you now have, or in groups at your own seminary or an Alpha or whatever?